Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. Here are a few quick divorce tips that we provide our clients. Number one, don't move out of your house just because your wife tells you to. Remember, that's your house too. And number two, don't blow through the financial statements that you file with the court. These are key exhibits, and they often make or break your case. And number three, watch the social networking. Expect your wife's lawyer to do a thorough online search. And incidentally, this is a two-way street. Now, a bonus tip. Partner with your attorney in assembling evidence. You're one of the two leading experts on your life and marriage. Your attorney needs your input to achieve your goals. And finally, talk to your attorney before taking action. Good luck.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys, a partner men can count on, online at CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, folks. It's now 5 minutes past 7 o'clock on Monday, the 20th of February. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, and Tan Chung Han. In about half an hour or so, Julian Ng will join me with a look at the top business news of the day. But first, we have Market Watch now with our commentator, Greg McKenna, Chief Market Strategist at AxiTrader in Sydney, Australia.
Good morning, Greg. Now, this week, we've got the latest FOMC minutes. Also, we are expecting quite a bit of scheduled Fed speak. So what are your expectations when it comes to perhaps getting more clues about the Fed's plans to raise U.S. interest rates?
Good morning, and thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning. Janet Yellen and Stanley Fischer, the Fed chair and vice chair, both gave us pretty clear indication last week that they want to be raising rates sometime soon, but the meeting that we had previously, the statement didn't seem to reflect that. So the market's going to be looking really closely at these minutes as to whether or not what they're saying is actually what they're thinking when they're all around the board table. And then we'll be listening to people like Loretta Meister tonight and other Fed speakers to try and figure out whether or not we're waiting till June for the next Fed hike, or whether it might we might actually see March in play, which is what it's looking like at the moment.
But given that the March meeting is only, I believe it's scheduled for the middle of the month, so it's only like, what, 2-3 weeks out, do you think, I mean, how much risk is there that could either, you know, see an upside or downside to the chances of a Fed rate hike in March?
Yeah, so I think March is a live meeting, but it's probably going to be used, if they are serious about bringing forward the rate hiking cycle and sticking to their plan for three rate hikes. I think March is more likely to be used as a signalling meeting, because you're right, they haven't really got time to get the market to the 60 or 70% expectation of probability that they like to see. But certainly between now and then, I get a real sense that they'll be signalling that rates will be going up sometime soon.
Now, how exposed, in your view, are the Fed's plans to the political risk channel? Because going back to Janet Yellen's comments recently in that the FOMC's decisions are going to be dependent on economic data. So what say you?
Yeah, I don't think that's true. I think that the Fed tries to be as independent as it can. But the reality is that, you know, events that in the political realm can overtake events in the markets or events in the economy. You know, the Fed talked about worries in China last year with regard to its economy. They worried about Brexit. No doubt they worried about the uncertainty of the election. So I think on balance, they're trying to chart a course without taking Donald Trump or the politics, US politics, into direct reference. But the reality is that if we get a big fiscal stimulus, they're going to have to take something into account. That's the reality of it. They just have to act and preempt what they think the economy is going to do. And politics is a big factor in 2017 and in the years ahead, I think.
And speaking about political risk, that channel very much alive and open over in Europe as well, not just from what may happen on the mainland, the French elections, for example, but perhaps also coming from President Trump and his effects bleeding over and jumping across the pond there. So, for example, over the weekend, you've got the German Chancellor Angela Merkel saying there's a problem with the euro's value, but she seems to be pinning that on the ECB monetary policy. So how much do you think think Mario Draghi and his colleagues at the ECB, at the European Central Bank, are they insulated from President Trump?
I think they're insulated by the very existence of the the framework within which the ECB has been put together. The minutes from last week's the minutes from the ECB's last meeting that were released last week really showed a commitment to look through the increase in inflation in Europe, to keep the foot on the monetary accommodation pedal, keep rates low, keep QE going. So I think that Mario Draghi will continue to do whatever it takes, using his words, to get the European economy not just spluttering like it is now, but on something sustainable. I think what Chancellor Merkel is doing is, like her finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, she's directly addressing the criticism of Donald Trump's trade negotiator, Peter Navarro, that effectively Germany was a currency manipulator, by saying that Germany doesn't set monetary policy. And she's right on that, but in a different world where there was still a French franc and a German Deutschmark and those kind of things, you'd definitely see Germany with a much stronger currency.
But also, given the criticisms against the ECB, saying that their monetary policy seems to favour the less productive members of the EU rather than Germany, so do you think that might put some pressure on Draghi moving forward?
Not at the moment. I don't think so. Unless we see, if inflation gets above 2% and stays above 2%, then the Germans and the other northern European countries will really start to push towards walking away from QE, starting to increase interest rates. But while ever it's there or thereabouts, I think that he's right to continue to focus on the troubles in Italy, in Spain, in Portugal. Greece is in the middle of another renegotiation. So those southern parts of Europe continue to have their issues. And I guess if you've got to have a one-size-fits-all policy, you really have to go for the weakest link, not the strongest link, which is Germany.
Now, moving over down under, speaking about the Australian dollar here, its movement often in tandem with commodity prices. But I understand you were quoted in local media recently that you believe the Aussie dollar's gains that we've seen this year, that's a sign of a wider trend. Can you elaborate that for us?
Yeah, sure. So it's easy to just think of the Aussie dollar as a reference point for commodity markets and just for Australia's terms of trade. But the Aussie plays a different role in global investors' portfolios. In many ways, if you look at a multi-factor model, not just commodity prices, you'd have to include things like investor risk appetite, because when investors are pretty happy, they're buying stocks, they think global growth's going to be okay, they think Australian growth's going to be okay, they take some pretty large positions in the Aussie dollar. And that's because the Reserve Bank of Australia has, with only a few exceptions, largely left the Aussie dollar to float. And over the last 30 years, we've traded 47.75, and we've traded up to 100 and almost 111, so against the US dollar. So it's these other drivers. Alan Greenspan once said if he wants to know what world growth's doing, he just looks at the Aussie dollar. And I think that is still part of the role. So we get the commodity kicker, but then we get the double whammy, if you want to put it that way, from investors thinking, hey, I'm now excited about stocks. I now want to sell a few bonds. I want to buy some Aussie dollars. That's how that transmission mechanism works.
But how much will those global trends then trump domestic factors? Because I'm thinking of the challenges that Turnbull might be facing right now. Also the threat of that downgrade, that sovereign credit rating downgrade, due to challenges on the fiscal front. So how do you balance out the two?
Yeah, largely with the interest rate differential. So if Australia was to get downgraded and the Aussie-US 10-year differential is roughly where it is, that wouldn't be an issue. But what happens is if we get downgraded and, say, the Australian economy is looking weak and the spread's compressing, so the pickup for buying Aussie compared to the US isn't just there, then international investors just walk away. So the best way to judge the impact of that is to look at the interest rate differential. And that's one of the reasons why it's been important for the Aussie dollar recently that our governor of our Reserve Bank has been so bullish on growth both as we are entering 2017 and then over the next few years.
So let's try this for size then. Compare your outlook for the Aussie dollar, say, against the South Korean won. I believe it's the biggest gainer in Asia year to date against the greenback. And there's a Bloomberg report recently saying that the Korean won provides the best proxy for how Asia reacts to the effects of President Trump. So again, you know, your outlook for the Aussie dollar compared with the won.
Yeah, I guess that's right. The won is, you know, the most exposed in many ways to some of the more, you know, dangerous trade policies that the president might take into account. You know, it's down at 11.50 at the moment. You know, over the course of the last year, it's gone from not even the last year, just the last 6 months, from 1,100 all the way up above 1,200, now back down. I think the won can strengthen across the course of 2017, but I think that's because the global economy is reflating. And I think to a certain extent, that's where the won and the rest of Asia is going to benefit, is that growth across the globe is actually picking up. And I think that's the hidden benefit of this Trumponomics stock market rally, is that it was consistent with what we've seen as a pickup in global growth and global economic data, you know, pretty much across the entire world. If you look at the G10 Economic Surprise Index, which just tells you, you know, how much better than expected economic data is, or you look at the emerging markets version of that, they have both moved up quite materially in the last 3 months. So I think the globe's reflating, and that's why I think that the won can do well.
And amidst that global reflation and also the themes that you mentioned earlier, the Fed's projected rate path and also the, you know, perhaps the anticipated uptrend in global growth. So earlier you also mentioned about the rest of Asia. Will the ringgit be able to ride on those coattails?
It's a lot harder for the ringgit, I think. The ringgit has really been driven, you know, with a few exceptions for, you know, periods of maybe 2 or 3 months at a time, maybe 6 months. It's really been driven by moves in the US dollar. So I think to that extent, you know, the US dollar's weakened off a little bit, and you've seen the, you know, the won rally that we were just talking about. But the ringgit hasn't really benefited to the extent that I would have thought. I think where it is now, you know, it's at multi-year highs. You know, the worst of any bad news that folks wanted to think about it are probably in. But, you know, moving maybe back towards, you know, 4.5 or you know, something like 4.55 against the US should cap it. And then I'd hope that it benefits in the same way that other currencies across the region will as growth picks up across the world.
Oh, trust me, we here share those same hopes as well. Still, very good stuff there. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. I've been speaking to Greg McKenna, Chief Market Strategist at XeTrader in Sydney.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello, I'm Joe Cordell of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. Here are a few quick divorce tips that we provide our clients. Number one, don't move out of your house just because your wife tells you to. Remember, that's your house too. And number two, don't blow through the financial statements that you file with the court. These are key exhibits, and they often make or break your case. And number three, watch the social networking. Expect your wife's lawyer to do a thorough online search. And incidentally, this is a two-way street. Now, a bonus tip. Partner with your attorney in assembling evidence. You're one of the two leading experts on your life and marriage. Your attorney needs your input to achieve your goals. And finally, talk to your attorney before taking action. Good luck.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's San Francisco area attorneys, a partner men can count on, online at CordellCordell.com. Offices in San Francisco, San Mateo, and San Jose. Se habla español. Legal services available in English and Spanish. Kimberly Llewellyn, licensed in California.